Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Federal agents have arrived at the Coast Guard base in Alameda. 100 agents are expected, according to reports. CBS News Bay Area reports that unmarked cars with out-of-state license plates drove onto the base. They're trying to find out who they are. This morning, protesters blocked the entrance to the base. One protester was run over on his ankle by a large SUV. Another was hit in the jaw by a flashbang canister. Just minutes before we went live today, we have some breaking news. The San Francisco Chronicle is reporting that San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie announced this morning that Trump called him late last night and told him, quote, clearly that he was calling off any plans for a federal deployment in San Francisco. The statement sent by Lurie's office also said Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem, quote, reaffirmed that direction in our conversation this morning. Lurie and his team would continue monitoring the situation, and the city remained prepared for any scenario. And I'll just read from Mayor Daniel Lurie's statement. Quote, yesterday I spoke to San Franciscans about a potential federal deployment in our city. I said then what I have said since taking office, that keeping San Franciscans safe is my top priority. Last night, I received a phone call from the President of the United States. I told him the same thing I told our residents. San Francisco is on the rise. Visitors are coming back. Buildings are getting leased and purchased, and workers are coming back to the office. We have work to do, and we would welcome continued partnerships with the FBI, DEA, ATF, and U.S. Attorney to get drugs and drug dealers off our streets. But having the military and militarized immigration enforcement in our city will hinder our recovery. Daniel Lurie goes on to say, we appreciate that the president understands that we are the global hub for technology, and when San Francisco is strong, our country is strong. In that conversation, the president told me clearly that he was calling off any plans for federal deployment in San Francisco. Well, joining us are three guests, and I'm very curious to find out what they think about this and how they are responding to this breaking news. Amanda Maya is program director with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area and former senior attorney at Kids in Need of Defense. Hi, Amanda. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
It's great to have you. We are also joined by Quentin Meck, Executive Director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Hi, Quentin. Thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning, Rose. Happy to be here.
Gabrielle Medina is Executive Director of the La Raza Community Resource Center. Hi, Gabrielle. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Gabrielle, let's start off with you. What's your response to this breaking news from Mayor Lurie?
I'm cautiously optimistic. So cautious because I don't necessarily think that the 100 federal, service members, agents, troops, whatever they might be called, are going to necessarily just turn around and go back. And I don't think they're going to stay and pick up trash. So I think it's still important to continue with our efforts to prepare our families, just continue to prepare for the worst. But I do think that what it says, and I am thankful for Mayor Lurie's leadership on this. I think one thing that he's done very effectively is take away the argument very effectively that, President Trump has made all the time, that there's chaos, there's, dilapidation in our democratically run cities. And the mayor has effectively done a lot to destroy a lot of those narratives as far as, how San Francisco is doing. Of course, it's not doing well for everybody. There's still a huge disparity of wealth, a huge disparity in some of our experts on this panel about housing and employment, and our immigrant families are still suffering a huge disparity. They're losing employment, whether these troops come or not. Their families are being separated, and they're having trouble, making their rental payments, being able to get food. We've seen a huge demand on the need for food at our market.
Right. We just recently did a show about demand at food banks, and because of the government shutdown, support for millions food support for millions in California will end on November 1st. And so we will definitely talk about all of those issues on today's show. Amanda, what are your thoughts on this breaking news that we're just getting from Mayor Daniel Lurie?
I mean, it's hard to so we're getting conflicting news is what I'm really what I'm understanding. You know, we do know that there's an increase in the amount of agents that have arrived to Alameda. And then we are now hearing that the current administration has stated that they would not be sending any troops to our area. So I'm finding it conflicting at best because of the information that we've already received where protesters have been injured. And we have seen an increase in the agents that are here. So I think right now, the best that we can do, like Gabriel already said, is continue to ensure that community members understand their rights and that we really encourage everyone to contact their local rapid response hotlines if they see a detention occur in their community. That's really important. I know that individuals and organizations are starting to hand out red cards, which have the rights of many people, particularly immigrants, when and if they were to be detained. So handing out red cards to community members and just moving from a place of power and not panic, and understanding that immigrants have constitutional rights. We all have constitutional rights, and we should make sure that we are asserting those and that we are helping others who may not understand their constitutional rights learn those quickly so that they can assert them in case they were to be detained.
And to your point about the conflicting information we're getting here is one question is, if Mayor Lurie spoke with Trump last night, why did the agent show up this morning? So everybody's going to try to get these questions answered. And I've asked our team to send me updates once new information comes out. And so hopefully we'll have that in the next 40 or so minutes. Quentin, what are your thoughts on this late breaking news?
I mean, as we look at this moment, I think it's super important for us to stay grounded in the fact that what is happening across the country is a racist deployment of immigration forces. If we just look at what has happened in Chicago, they had Black Hawk helicopters raid apartment buildings that were predominantly African American and Latino, arresting US citizens. At best, I would say that we have bought ourselves time. And I think in solidarity with understanding what is happening in other cities across the country in regards to ICE, we really need to be cautious about this narrative around public safety, because none of this has anything to do with public safety. And yet we have to engage in this narrative with the Trump administration as if we have to justify the fact that San Francisco is a safe city, or Oakland or Chicago or Portland or Los Angeles. And I think the reality is that traumatizing our Black and brown communities of color across the country right now. And while the agents have just arrived to Alameda this morning, they have been at the immigration court on a daily basis for the last 8 months. And they have been taking people right off of the street there at immigration court. And so while I can cautiously, along with Amanda and Gabriel, acknowledge that, great, they're not going to do a full-throated, aggressive deployment like they've done in Chicago, we should be really cautious about what we're looking at right now and what we need to do to build deeper resiliency and make sure that rather than just relying on individual conversations with the mayor and President Trump to deflect a deployment now, what are we talking about and what do we need to do in future days and future weeks and months? Because we are on a very long road with this administration, and we're only 10 months in, and the level of dysfunction and disturbance that they have caused in our communities has just been so epic, it's hard to actually even calculate.
Well, to your point, we talked yesterday about what has been happening on the streets in Chicago, many cities around the Los Angeles area. There was a crackdown on Canal Street in Manhattan. And that's where people sell things like, you know, fake bags and things like that. And a lot of citizens got involved in that. There were arrests. And we repeated these facts on yesterday's show. So Donald Trump campaigned on a promise to deport 20 million undocumented immigrants. The Department of Homeland Security says 2 million people have been deported or have self-deported since January 20th. Over 59,000 people are in ICE detention. And the Cato Institute got its hands on data from ICE, which found 65% of people taken by ICE have had no convictions at all. 93% have had no violent convictions, 93%. I don't know why that's not getting more attention. I asked our guests yesterday. I'd love to ask all of you, Gabriel, why aren't these numbers getting more attention? Because in a statement that was released about what would be happening in San Francisco, once again, the government said they're going after the, quote, worst of the worst. And a lot of people voted for Donald Trump because of this, because of immigration. And yet, when you look at these numbers, the overwhelming majority of people who are being picked up have no record at all, have no violent record at all.
Yeah, I mean, that's not surprising. You know, I think when you're going to, you know, incarcerate folks and detain folks that are, you know, lawfully showing up to their court dates or going to their place of employment, you know, where they're working every day, yes, that's not where you're going to be picking up criminals. And, you know, you're going to be picking up family members and folks that are paying taxes in this economy and supporting each other. So, yes, it's not surprising that the data lines up with that. Why is it not being picked up? I think, you know, that's a really good question. You know, I certainly this federal administration does not want to promote that message. But honestly, you know, they don't really care if it's consistent with that message. And I think, you know, what Quentin said is absolutely correct, that it's true. It doesn't matter if, you know, San Francisco is the safest city in the country or the most dangerous city in the country. The primary objective of this administration is racist and to deport folks that don't look like them, don't share the same racial background as them. It's been openly stated by several members of the administration. So it doesn't matter. A lot of this is just pretense, but that's why, you know, to Amanda's point, it's still important to be vigilant. Remember your rapid response. You know, we're going to be digging deeper into our family preparedness. But yeah, that's why I think it is. There's at least half the media, you know, and our corporate controlled media is very much, you know, complicit. At least half of it, if not, you know, a large majority of it is complicit in making sure that these narratives don't get out. And that's really unfortunate.
The Guardian did have a piece last month. Immigrants with no criminal record are now the largest group in ICE detention. And so it's important to point that out. Today, we are joined by Gabriel Medina, Executive Director of the La Raza Community Resource Center. Quentin Meck is Executive Director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Amanda Maya is Program Director with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. And federal agents have arrived at the Coast Guard base in Alameda. According to reports, 100 agents are expected. CBS News Bay Area reports that they saw unmarked cars with out-of-state license plates. They're trying to find out who these people are. But right before we went on air, the San Francisco Chronicle has a story about San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie saying he spoke with Trump late last night and told him clearly he was calling off any plans for a federal deployment in San Francisco. The statement by Lurie's office also said Secretary of Homeland Security Kristi Noem reaffirmed that direction in our conversation this morning. So what do you make of all of this? We'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at KALW www.ukraine.org. And we'll talk about this in a few minutes, but it is important to also mention that Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff did an interview with the New York Times 2 weeks ago and called on Trump to bring the National Guard to San Francisco. He said he's a supporter of Trump. And because he got slammed across the board, he walked those words back. So that's also an interesting angle. And Quentin, we'll ask you about the piece you wrote about that in a few minutes. But I want to ask all of you to give us an update about what is happening in San Francisco and what has been happening. There's so much going on. It's hard to keep up. And because of the violence that we've seen in LA and Chicago and New York, these stories that are coming out in San Francisco are not getting as much attention. So here's a piece from just a couple of days ago by Jesse Alejandro Cottrell in the San Francisco Standard. Outside court, ICE agents lay in wait. Inside, these lawyers are immigrants' last hope. It's a Friday morning at immigrant court on Sansom Street in San Francisco, a few minutes before the judge shows up, and attorney Diana Mariscal is trying her best not to scare anyone, but from the looks of it, she's failing. Standing amid the pews in the court gallery with more than a dozen people awaiting their hearings, Mariscal explains in Spanish that there's a chance they will all be detained today. It's the whole reason she's there, but she doesn't tell them that. Eyes widen and mouths hang open. She says, "We hope this doesn't happen, but if it does, we can help you." So, Amanda, can you give us an update about what has been happening in the courts in San Francisco?
Yes. So I have witnessed several courthouse arrests, which have been very difficult. And different judges treat this issue differently. But what we are seeing is that when the Department of Homeland Security moves to dismiss a case, there is a high likelihood that that person will be detained immediately when they walk out of the room, of the courtroom. And so what we do when we serve as volunteer attorneys for Attorney of the Day, which is a program in San Francisco Immigration Court, where we provide support to unrepresented respondents, is really telling them their rights before they're detained. And the people that I've worked with have had no criminal records. They are hardworking community members who are trying to do the right thing by going to their court hearing. And it has been very disturbing to see many of them break down in tears when we tell them, "I'm going to walk you outside. ICE is present outside and they're going to detain you." And all of them look so surprised and they're like, "Why is this happening to me? I thought if I came to my court hearing, nothing would happen to me. I'm seeking asylum." And when we walk outside, ICE will grab them. They'll take their belongings. Usually ICE agents have some sort of face covering, and we're not able to get a lot of information from those ICE officers when we ask them. These individuals, from what we understand, are being transported. Well, when they're in 100 Montgomery, they're transported to 630 Sansom, where they're held for usually, you know, we don't know how long they're held at 630 Sansom. From what we can tell, many individuals, you know, there's been several individuals who've been held overnight in past 24 hours. The Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, along with other organizations, filed a lawsuit challenging these courthouse arrests that have occurred, and that litigation is ongoing.
And just to talk about some of the specifics here, the San Francisco Standard writes about Yisan and Yina, who were at the courthouse. And after they're called, but before they've had a chance to present their case for asylum, the attorney for the government moves to dismiss their case. The couple looks shocked. Following the instructions Mariscal gave them, they request a chance to respond to the government's motion in writing. They look distraught. ICE officers are waiting for them in the hallway, but they don't come inside the courtroom. And Yina says, "Can we refuse to be taken?" And someone says no, and they begin to quietly cry. Over the next hour, a total of 8 migrants have their cases dismissed by the government. So how often is this happening in San Francisco, Amanda?
I mean, up until recently, it was happening pretty much every single week. We saw these arrests occur, and it was, I mean, we've taken different approaches. A lot of organizations are filing habeas petitions now because the Department of Homeland Security is claiming that immigrants are no longer eligible for bond if they entered without inspection. Really, the only way to get these individuals out of detention is through filing habeases with federal courts. And so immigration practitioners who've never done this before are now developing an expertise in this, because this is really the only way to support community members and is a way that we can mobilize as a community to protect these hardworking individuals who truly are trying to just seek asylum, which is their right here in the United States to do so, and be able to show that they suffered persecution in their home country. So this is something that we're monitoring. I have two team members currently at Attorney of the Day who are there trying to monitor if there are any courthouse arrests today so that they can support those people if they are detained by ICE.
What happens after these people are detained?
Typically what happens is, like I mentioned, they get transferred to the what one could characterize, I guess, as holding cells at 630 Sansom. This is not a detention center. It's being used as a detention center because there aren't sufficient beds. And so it's being used for them to hold them overnight until they can transfer them to a detention, like an actual detention center, which usually is either GSA or Mesa Verde. And so we're seeing people be transferred usually within 36 hours to these detention centers. And if they claim that they have a fear of returning to their home country, they will be administered either a reasonable fear interview or a credible fear interview. Unfortunately, many of these people don't have representation during this time, or if they do have representation, I have seen that there's not very good communication as to when these interviews are even being scheduled for. And so it becomes an access issue where if you're not being represented by counsel, you really don't understand the significance of these interviews, what the standard is, you don't have access to representation, and you're in this stressful scenario where you don't know how long you're going to be detained for, you're separated from your family, from your loved ones, and being forced to explain, which can sometimes be quite difficult, what exactly your fear is in returning to your home country without an attorney there to assist you in that. And then if you pass that interview, then you would theoretically be held in detention, where you would then have to fight your claim for asylum in detention, which can be very difficult for individuals who are separated from their families again and being treated as if they had committed some sort of crime and held in very difficult conditions for extended periods of time. And if they fail their interview, either their credible fear interview or their reasonable fear interview, it is very likely that they will be deported as soon as DHS is able to figure out where they can send them to.
Gabriel, can you tell us about some of the people that you're working with in your community? Have any of them dealt with these courts? Have they been detained? How are people going about this, given that a lot of this is unprecedented?
I mean, so we've been fortunate that our team of attorneys have not had anyone detained as of yet. They do serve as Attorney of the Day on a regular basis as well. So those folks, obviously, some of them are getting detained. But as far as like a lot of strategies, our team are trying to use is to, of course, have as many remote, appearances as possible so they don't have to show up in person. Others have gotten postponements, to kind of delay. So that's what we're seeing for our caseload. But I know that, yeah, there's folks that happen every week. And San Francisco has been probably a little more privileged than other counties as far as having less detentions. I know that like San Mateo County and Alameda County, they've had a lot more detentions than compared to San Francisco. But yeah, it's been, that's what we've seen, but we still have folks that come to us for either food or emergency assistance, that have had family members that were lost, through detention. And so we try to serve them as much as possible with any resources. But unfortunately, what we have seen as well, we have seen a lot of our, you know, folks that we serve self-deport. We have seen lots of those, and that's been really, you know, sad and unfortunate.
Well, we're getting more information about what is going on here, and we'll talk about this after a break. So Donald Trump just tweeted, it looks like he tweeted right when we went live. I'll just read this. The federal government was preparing to, quote, surge San Francisco, but friends of mine who live in the area called last night to ask me not to go forward with the surge, in that the mayor was making substantial progress. I spoke to Mayor Lurie last night, and he asked very nicely that I give him a chance to see if he can turn it around. I told him I think he's making a mistake because we can do it faster and remove the criminals. I told him it's an easier process if we do it. The people of San Francisco have come together on fighting crime, especially since we began to take charge of that very nasty subject. And here's what's very interesting. Trump goes on to write, great people like Jensen Huang, Mark Benioff, and others have called, saying that the future of San Francisco is great. They want to give it a shot. Therefore, we will not surge San Francisco on Saturday. Stay tuned. So that's a tweet that just came down from Donald Trump, and we'll get a response from our guests after a break. Amanda Maya is program director with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. Quentin Meck is executive director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Gabriel Medina is executive director of the La Raza Community Resource Center. We should also say, people are wondering, is this only the case in San Francisco? Are these agents going to other Bay Area cities? Mission Local reports that the fate of other Bay Area cities has not been mentioned, and they left a message for Oakland Mayor Barbara Lee, but they have not heard back from her office yet. So a lot's happening right now as we're on the air. Just to give you a recap, in case you're just tuning in, federal agents have arrived at the Coast Guard base in Alameda. 100 are expected, according to reports. CBS News Bay Area reports unmarked cars without of-state license plates drove onto the base. They're trying to find out who they are. This morning, protesters blocked the entrance. One was run over on his ankle by a large SUV. Another was hit in the jaw by a flashbang canister. And then right when we went on the air, the San Francisco Chronicle announced or had a report about Mayor Lurie announcing Trump called him last night and said he was calling off plans. And then the San Francisco Standard just posted that tweet that I read from Trump. So this is all breaking as we're on the air. And we'd love to hear from you. What are your thoughts about all of this? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on our media roundtable, we will speak with Bay Area reporters about how they are covering all of this, and we'll definitely have a lot more information for you by then. I mentioned Trump's tweet, and so he said that Jensen Huang, who is the CEO of NVIDIA, Mark Benioff and others have called saying that the future of San Francisco is great. So, Quentin, I'd love to get your thoughts on this. And we should provide some context here because on October 10th, Salesforce CEO Mark Benioff spoke with Heather Knight and told her that he is a Trump supporter and he liked the idea and thought that National Guard soldiers should come to San Francisco to help reduce crime in the city. He said, quote, we don't have enough cops, so if they can be cops, I'm all for it. And then people across the board slammed what he said, and then he walked it back. So you wrote an entire piece about all of this. First off, what's your response to Trump tweeting that he talked to Benioff and the NVIDIA CEO, Jensen Huang, and others who said that the future of San Francisco is great and they want to give it a shot, and therefore we will not surge San Francisco on Saturday.
You know, Rose, I've always been taught when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And I think what we have seen with Mark Benioff is the reality that there are no good billionaires. And of course, Jensen Huang, Peter Thiel, David Sachs, all of the Bay Area billionaires and in San Francisco have done nothing in the course of the last 9 months but kiss the ring. And I think bend a knee to President Trump. And I think this is the reality that we are facing here. And so it's been interesting to see, you know, Mark Benioff in 2018 gave about $8 million to a ballot measure to tax tech companies to support homelessness. And I think that's what really, in addition to some other donations, and that's what gave him this local reputation as the good billionaire or our one good billionaire. And in reality, as soon as push comes to shove, as soon as it comes to show some courage, the true values of he and his fellow billionaires are naked for everybody to see. And I think that is the space where I think that is probably deeply frustrating for all of us, which is San Francisco has the fourth most billionaires in the world, 63, to a total of something ridiculous, $217 billion in those 63 individuals. And yet we continually almost gaslight ourselves and tell ourselves that we don't have money for things. And in San Francisco, we don't have money for affordable housing, or we're running a deficit, or nonprofits have to be cut. And I think this is the space where it's hard to navigate without naming that, that the system itself creates this feeling of scarcity all of the time for our communities of color, our low-income communities. And I think this narrative is a tale of two such separate realities in cities. The mayor would like to say, we're on the upswing, everything is great, AI is coming in, we have this wonderful new gold rush. And there are so many people that are being left behind and are struggling with increasing rents, being evicted, not being able to afford a place, and they've lived here their whole lives, they're working two jobs. And I think it's hard to know, and I know Gabriel deals in the same communities, so does Amanda, and these stories of the people that live here and make the city are sacrificed on this larger narrative that everything is actually okay and their needs are not being met. And I think this is the gap that San Francisco really struggles with, about we have billionaires and yet we're left to their own devices about when and if they should give money. And the only, you know, an interesting dynamic that came out of the Mark Benioff being called out and watching him have to publicly retreat was they had an interview with Lorraine Powell Jobs, Steve mm-hmm. Jobs' widow. And she made a very direct comment about Mark Benioff's giving and really named the fact, which has been true for a very long time, which is it's not really philanthropy if you decide as the billionaire giver to only handpick and select your particular programs that you want to give and direct your money there, because then you are shaping policy in both a direct and indirect fashion. And then rather than challenge that model, we continue to let it propagate itself, and we celebrate people when they give a pittance of their money. And so I think it's super important for everyone in the city to really understand the fact that rather than believe in the scarcity narrative that we're told, we have enough resources to address all of the problems that we face as a city. We just choose to allow a system to tell us that we don't.
Well, in the interview Benioff did with Heather Knight with the New York Times, Heather Knight writes that Benioff's team wanted him to highlight his latest round of philanthropy, which includes another personal donation of $100 million to the University of California San Francisco Children's Hospitals named after him, $39 million gift to schools and children's causes. And Benioff said, quote, "I don't think anyone has hired more people or given more money or supported San Francisco more than I have." And then to your point about Lorraine Powell Jobs, the San Francisco Standard wrote about this, and she wrote, "In his eyes, Benioff's eyes, generosity is an auction and policy is the prize awarded to the highest bidder." Gabriel, why don't you jump in here? What are your thoughts about what we're learning? I think it's so interesting that Trump is putting it all out there, saying that he talked with Benioff and others and decided to call this off for now, because as he says, stay tuned, exclamation point.
Well, I think this has been incredible. I mean, I feel, and maybe others might feel like a little sense of disbelief, like we're living in some sort of movie, because this is, it's surreal. It's surreal. It really illustrates like so clearly how much our country is run by oligarchs. It's not by law and order. It's more by pay to play. And it's just surreal how, you know, as Quentin said earlier, let them tell you who they are, you know, believe them. And we're seeing that so clearly. You know, we're actually a beneficiary of Prop C, which was the ballot measure that Benioff supported in issuing rental assistance that comes out of that. And so, you know, that has been helpful for a lot of families to help stabilize and prevent homelessness. But of course, you know, that's still a drop in the bucket. We are, you know, San Francisco's an amazing resource-rich city with assets not only in San Francisco, but outside of San Francisco that we hold. That's where I reflect on this, is just how surreal it is. And really, when it comes to, like, say, the strategies of Mayor Daniel Lurie in this case, you know, they're not systemic changes. For the way I view them, is it's buying time. It's buying time for us to prepare our families. It's buying time for us to hopefully wait out this administration. It's buying time for, you know, some organizing of some systemic change, because right now everything is controlled by the whims of these oligarchs.
Amanda, what's your response to all of this?
Yeah, it seems really ridiculous that the current administration is relying on the feedback of a few several CEOs that are local versus the community members and the community leaders who are actually working with the community and who can speak to what our population and what our city really needs. I don't think any of these individuals who the president is speaking with really have an idea of what our community members needs, because they are not indicative or even reflective of what our community is. I think right now it seems pretty wasteful to deploy all of these agents during a federal government shutdown where so many people are going to struggle to be able to access food. I mean, the needs of our community members are so different than the CEOs who seem almost responsible or have a huge control over our fate. And that is so perverse. It's not democratic, and it's not something I would recommend. I'm floored, really, honestly, by it, that they had any say in whether troops came or not. And it shouldn't be that way. And I think Governor Gavin Newsom for days, Mayor Lori for days have been saying that we do not need troops in the city of San Francisco or anywhere else in the Bay Area. And I think that their voices should be amplified over the few voices of the CEOs who are not reflective, again, of the community or work with community members to uplift them and ensure that their constitutional rights are protected.
To your point about money, this is another fact that deserves to be repeated because it's a lot of money. The Republican budget bill gave ICE $170 billion. And we've been reporting on how they're spending it. We talked yesterday about the surveillance apparatus that they're also building. So $170 billion for ICE, as you say, Amanda, at a time when people are really struggling. I mean, if a deal doesn't come through, people's healthcare costs are going to double or possibly even triple in some cases here in California. I want to take a couple callers who've been waiting. We also have a few emails. Today, we're speaking with Amanda Maya, Program Director with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. Quentin Meck is Executive Director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Gabriel Medina is Executive Director of the La Raza Community Resource Center. And just to quickly recap, federal agents have arrived at the Coast Guard base in Alameda. Protesters blocked an entrance this morning right when we came on the air. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote that San Francisco Mayor Daniel Lurie said he spoke with Trump last night and told him that he was calling off any plans for a federal deployment in San Francisco. We all were wondering why. And then a tweet came out and Trump said that Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, Mark Benioff and others called to say that the future of San Francisco is great. They want to give it a shot. Therefore, we will not surge San Francisco on Saturday. Stay tuned. We don't know what this means for other Bay Area cities. Mission Local says they've got a call in to Oakland Mayor Barbara Lee, so we'll be monitoring that. But this is just a pretty wild hour so far. Let's hear from a couple callers. Let's go to GS in South Lake Tahoe. Hi, GS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so very much for letting me join your show here. Okay, two big issues. Number one, we absolutely must raise taxes on the rich. The people with billions of dollars to mess around with are, you know, they're not stealing from the rest of the country, but they're just getting away with an awful lot. And I think a lot of people are suffering, and that's just wrong. Okay, so regular income taxes, both federal and state, should be raised on people who have conventional income of any kind over a certain amount, like maybe $200,000, pick a number. And then the second thing, E, with regard to the ICE nonsense, still with the rich, get more serious about investment and stock profits and stuff. I know that the taxation on that is a very different matter, capital gains and things like that. I don't understand how the tax law works on this, but you get the gist of what I'm trying to say. Okay, and then finally, a whole separate issue. This is really quick. We have got to keep the damn federal ICE people at bay. It's embarrassing. This country, $100 billion to fund that.
Well, thank you so much, GS. There's a new book out about taxes and how we got to this point of massive inequality, and we're going to be doing that in the coming weeks. So thank you. I'm going to take another caller, read a few emails, and then we'll ask our guest to respond. Parker in San Francisco. Hi, thank you for holding.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. Appreciate your show, especially during this breaking hour. I guess my question was, Daniel Lurie himself, wealthy tech elite who got hired and, elected as our mayor. What do we kind of think he should be doing instead? I feel like, honestly, the people I talked to, they all seem to like him. They're really bought into his social media campaign around all this. And I just find that he offers milquetoast solutions. He's basically embedding people with tech. He's willing to give big prominent tech contracts to his buddies in tech and courts open AI. So I'm having a difficult time seeing what he is actually going to do. But I'm curious what you think would be a more positive approach. I find Chicago's mayor has offered a lot of really insightful policy that seems to be working in Chicago. So thank you.
Thank you. Chicago's mayor has also called for a general strike. I'm going to read a couple more emails and then we'll get responses. Art writes, Trump backs off when strength is demonstrated. That's what we're doing today by getting organized and ready for an increased ICE presence threatened by the president with well-organized nonviolent rallies like the one planned today in San Francisco. Nick writes, Trump is using this to let the world know he listens to and chooses his oligarch friends over the interests of regular everyday Americans. Stephen writes, we are not answering why people appear to vote against their own best interests. How is that? Well, thank you for the emails and calls. You all are directly connected to so many communities in San Francisco. What are your thoughts overall about Mayor Lurie so far? And then to Parker's question, how do you all think that he should be dealing with this? I mean, Quentin, in the piece that you wrote, you say San Francisco has the means to house every person within its borders. What it lacks is the will to direct its abundance toward those the market's left behind. If this city cannot use its extraordinary wealth to protect the most vulnerable, then what exactly is all that wealth for? So how would you respond to to Parker's question?
I mean, I think the invitation that we would make to Mayor Lurie and his team and the Board of Supervisors is, at this moment, this is the time, with all of the challenges faced by the federal government, the Trump administration, the state, et cetera, is to lay out a large vision for San Francisco that is rooted in the change coming from the bottom rather than the top. The model of trickle-down economics, or the idea that wealth will just be sort of spread amongst folks eventually from the top down, has been tried for generations. It's clearly failed. And I think the opportunity for us in this moment is, especially for us in talking about how do we house people? There are thousands of unhoused folks in San Francisco and in the Bay Area. And that opportunity to say, what can we do to think big? Philadelphia, for example, earlier this year, their new mayor, Mayor Parker, unveiled a $2 billion housing initiative. Now, Philadelphia has half the budget San Francisco does and twice or three times the population. So if Philadelphia can name $2 billion for how to house its most vulnerable residents and really expand the idea of how do we win and start to make some progress on housing, I think that we can as well, especially with the immense amounts of wealth in the AI sector, in the tech sector. Now, clearly, as Benioff has given us an example, they are not aligned with our values, and the mayor has the opportunity to bring them along. This is the space for the public sector, and this is the space for his, you know, role as mayor to really shepherd these folks into a vision that's more collective and one that actually creates prosperity for all of us from the bottom up.
Gabriel, what would you like to add?
I mean, just in reflecting with that, I mean, I just really, I'm still just in shock and keeping up with all of this news. But I would like to add just why, what makes San Francisco great, and we are one of the wealthiest cities in the country. I mean, we're talking about like owning a space as large as Yosemite and Hetch Hetchy. We're talking about quarries. We're talking about areas all over the state. As far as resources, we absolutely do underinvest as far as how the resources are distributed. I think in terms of trickle down, we've seen that certainly with like deregulation of everything possible, whether deregulation of taxes for tech companies that move here or deregulation of zoning and land use, really to try to cater to a population that really just wants to come and exploit San Francisco for profit. I think there absolutely are enough resources in San Francisco. There needs to be. I think we've had a demonstration at the federal level, and even at the local level as well, how much, you know, there is a different elite class that controls more than democracy. And it's really, I find it really, really tough, and we all have to be resilient in this, but because I'm always being challenged and we're all being challenged about how effective democracy is really shaping up to be for us, because we're seeing it break down with these unilateral decisions from the wealthy elite. And so we have to keep, you know, maintaining faith in our democracy, but at the same time, we need to look at some serious systemic change.
And Amanda, what would you like to add in our final minutes?
Yeah, I think it's going to be really important. And I would invite Mayor Lori to start thinking about ways in which we can support the immigrant community in San Francisco specifically. And then I also just invite more broadly mayors across the Bay Area to think about how they can support immigrants who are increasingly afraid to even leave their home to drop off their children at school and access these very essential services because they're afraid that they're going to be detained. And thinking about how they can create a strategy that makes sure that everyone in our community feels welcome and that there are services designed to support them. I think that there are a lot of really incredible organizations that are supporting the immigrant community, and I would continue to fund those organizations, think about how we can expand funding for rapid response networks so that we can continue protecting immigrants and ensuring that they have access to representation and that we have the ability to manage the number of cases right now that we're faced with, which I know that a lot of organizations are really capped because there's so much need in the community at this time to support immigrants and make sure that their rights are not being violated.
Amanda Maya is Program Director with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights of the San Francisco Bay Area. Quentin Meck is Executive Director of the Council of Community Housing Organizations. Gabriel Medina is Executive Director of the La Raza Community Resource Center. Thank you all so much for joining us, and we'd love to have you back soon.
Great. Take care.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow on our media roundtable, we will be speaking with Bay Area reporters about how they are covering all of this, and we'll be keeping a close eye on what will be happening in other Bay Area cities like Oakland. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.